For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Today on Sticks In, we are back. We are talking through some recent PLL news. We have the Jackson Morrill to the Whipsnakes trade to break down. We've got the playoff picture taking shape with 1 week of games left. We look at the various scenarios for all eight teams, the PLL. We talk about the Chrome looking like they're officially on the clock for the 2024 PLL draft. And then we answer a little bit of mail. We have some messages that came to the Sticks In site over the course of the last, I'm way behind on this, month or so, 2 months even. So we'll take a look at some of those and we'll talk about what's on the minds of folks who are nice enough to spend their time listening to the pod or reading some of the content on the site. All that coming up here. If you are liking the pod, if you like the site, please do leave a like, subscribe, download, review, 5-star rating, whatever your podcast platform allows you to do. And thank you for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. We had a little week hiatus there last week. I do apologize for that. Just pull back the curtain for you a little bit. I have been a little under the weather at the end of last week. But on top of that, the actual job that I do during the day is not this. It's not lacrosse. But my actual job has had me working all kinds of crazy hours over the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks even. So it's been tough to find as much time as I usually try to find for lacrosse. But hey, no excuses. I dropped the ball. Didn't get the content out last week that I wanted to. Hopefully we are back on the horse this week with our usual slate of we got the pod today. We'll have our food guide. We did have the food guide for Tacoma. We'll have a food guide for Utah. We'll have a weekend primer. I'll try and get to power rankings and all that, although we kind of know the deal there anyway. And then we'll be into the last weekend of lacrosse. So why don't we start with the big personnel news of the day? The Chrome have traded Jackson Morrill to the Whipsnakes. The full terms are Jackson Morrill and the Chrome's third-round pick to get back the Whipsnakes' second-round and third-round picks this year. So it's basically Jackson Morrill for a second-rounder, and then there's a third-round pick swap. I reported the Morrill portion of this on Monday night. Full deal announced Tuesday, about an hour before the deadline. The trade deadline was Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. This was the only deadline deal. So the Whips get Jackson Morrill, who is going to run out of the box for them as we kind of look at both sides of this deal a little bit here. No problem for that, right? He's done that with success. He's done it for the Chrome. Morrill's a very smart player. He's got a great lax IQ. He wins off the dodge more frequently than he gets credit for, honestly. He's a very capable dodger and is quietly one of the most accurate shooters in the PLL. There are only a handful of players in the PLL who have taken as many shots or more shots and also shooting for a better percentage than Jackson Morrill. Those three guys are Ryder Garnsey, Wes Berg, Eric Law. Three very high percentage shooters. Morrill also hits the net with his shots just under 90% of the time, 89.3%. That's the best rate in the PLL. He's a very good shooter. Does not get enough shout for that. On this team, he's going to draw short sticks. He's going to draw winnable matchups, right? He's going to be out there with Dordovic, with Brad Smith, with Matt Rambo, with Zed Williams. There's four guys who need poles already. And that's if you're going to short Will Manny on the attack as it is. So he's going to get those short stick matchups, and that's going to be a great opportunity for some invert looks for the Whips, something that the Whips, you know, it's not really a massive part of what they do. I think their midfield weapons, Smith and Dordovic, they tend to stay above the goal. It's where they're dodging most comfortably is above the goal, maybe down at the wing a little bit. Morrell can kind of bring the big little game. He can bring a true invert look. Some more kind of new wrinkles to the offense, I think, come with him. Keegan Conn was really the only guy, I think, bringing that kind of invert look for them on a consistent basis this year. I would consider Morrell an upgrade from that. And the Whips give up their second round pick. But look, if they find themselves deep in the playoffs, it becomes a very late second rounder. And then the pick swap in the third round basically puts them near the top of round three, or at the top of round three. So not a massive risk in terms of movement if they're betting on themselves, right? That's kind of, as we'll get to the Chrome part, you'll see that's kind of the way I see this trade really shaping up. Is it's really both teams betting on what the Whips are going to do in the postseason. If the Whips lose early, they'll draft at the top of round three, and that's not the end of the world for them. And if they lose early, their second round pick just gets better for the Chrome, which is kind of the bad end of things. But I like the Whips end of that, you know, from that point of view of adding another wrinkle to their offense. If you want a kind of questionable part of it, you question the timing, maybe. The offense has had some good weeks lately. You know, there's been some bad weeks. Their week against the Archers out west was not good. I don't think there's any debating that. They did not play a great game there. But, you know, do you want to introduce another new piece to the offense this late in the season and risk, you know, trying to get a new guy, new chemistry acclimated when you don't have a lot of opportunities to get time to play together? So we'll kind of see. You know, Morrell's role is not going to be massive, so it's not a huge risk in that regard. We'll see how he fits in, though. So that's kind of the Whips end of things. You know, looking at the Chrome side, they get the Whips second round pick and a pick swap in the third. So the move creates an opening at X for Chrome. That's kind of was one of the big talking points after the announcement today. And like we said, they're effectively on the clock for the first overall pick, you know, barring some miracle finishes this weekend. We'll talk about some of the scenarios in a minute here. But the Chrome are going to finish last. So the discourse has begun. Brandon O'Neill, Connor Schellenberger, first overall. Schellenberger is the natural X attackman. Brennan is a lefty, you know, lefty wing kind of most comfortable player, I think. The lefty side of the Chrome offense is currently played by Logan Wisnowskis. So you'd be moving someone around if you draft Brennan. If it's me, Brennan is just too good of a prospect to pass up. This is literally the second coming of John Grant Jr. sitting there for you. You can't just not take him. And, you know, on top of that, this is kind of a point I tried to start maybe making on social media today, on Twitter today, but, you know, there's no rule that says the Chrome have to take that X attackman need at first overall, right? They could take Brandon O'Neill at one and still say, all right, we still need someone to, you know, play X. They have the first round pick in round two. That's eight picks later. You know, you could have guys like Matt Brandau, Ross Scott, two great X players sitting there. First team All-American caliber guys playing at X, natural X attackman sitting there that can come join your team and play with Brennan O'Neill. Like that sounds like a fine outcome to me. You know, those guys are ready-made pros who will play from X comfortably. So I don't think that's a bad outcome. So I we'll see how kind of they evaluate that. But either way, I like the deal for Chrome. In a draft like this one, stockpiling as many picks as you can is not going to be a bad thing. You want to have those assets and a draft is stacked. If you can get a team to part with a draft choice, whatever that deal is, you got to, I think, at least consider it. Chrome has done that. I think it's a good deal from Pseudo on deadline day. Really, like I said, you know, the Whips are kind of betting on themselves. The Chrome are kind of betting that the Whips don't do much in the playoffs. Because if the Whips lose early, that second round pick of theirs becomes a very early second round pick. And like we've said, this draft is crazy deep. Those early round two picks are going to get first round level talent. So if Whips lose early and that becomes an early pick in round two that the Chrome get, they get some really, really solid pieces there. And then that third round swap, if that happens, the Chrome don't move back very far because the Whips' natural pick would be at the top of round three. They swap and then the Chrome go from whatever, first in round three to third, fourth. They don't move too much. You know, that's kind of the Chrome's bet here. Morrall is a free agent to be anyway. So this is, you know, in other sports, you would call this a rental. And if the Chrome really want to get nuts and love him, they can go to him when this season's over and say, hey, you want to sign back? We got space for you. You can be the ex-attackman again. And they can sign him. They can sign their guy back. So that's kind of the way I see that trade shaken out. I'm excited to see the way Morrall plays in Salt Lake. I imagine he'll be with the team out there in the lineup. You got to get him out there. You can't just wait till the playoffs to throw him in. So we'll get a better idea of just what the plan is for Morrall in the next few days. And, you know, we'll kind of see what the Chrome are working with. I think maybe they try and get a look at some guys to see who's going to be part of the plan for the future in this last week as well. But, you know, looking in that direction, looking at the kind of the games this weekend and the playoff picture that are for the teams that are still alive. We did have some good games out in Seattle last week. We had some very late nights for yours truly and a few other Brave media members. Those pressers, post-game pressers after those games, both nights are finishing, you know, between 1 and 2 a.m. local time here. So definitely burning the midnight oil and fighting through those next days with my kids. But, hey, look, it was fun. We got to have very sparsely attended pressers, which meant you get to the guys lots of questions, which is always good. So, but anyway, to this weekend, let's start. Let's look at the playoff picture after last week a little bit here. So the Archers are at the top spot. They are 8-1. They have locked up the one seed. They have locked up the bye into the semifinals. They don't need to travel to Gillette. They won't be there. They're looking like they're a tier above everyone else to me right now. You know, in the post game, I actually asked Coach Bates, because I think it's time to start wondering about this. How are the Archers going to measure success this season? Looking how they look and with their record and the way they are beating teams and the way they play. And, you know, when I asked them the question, I invoked the 73-win Warriors and how great they were, but they did not win the title. I asked, do they feel on championship or bust? And Bates said, you know, the report card comes in September for them. So, you know, I think that is going to be how they rate themselves a little bit this year. It's got to be title or bust for them in my eyes. They have no missing pieces on this team. They're outstanding everywhere. Schreiber feels like a lock to win midfielder of the year for sure. I think the MVP, I can't imagine somebody else jumping in front of him right now. You know, there might be some shouts for Marcus Holman or, you know, really, I think he's probably the only guy to consider. But Schreiber feels like the MVP and the midfielder of the year. The coaching staff has been great. Coach Bates will be in the mix for coach of the year. The defense is led by the man I think should win the defensive player of the year, and Graham Hossick. Their young shorties play like vets. Obviously, Sisselberger has been incredible. They're not having issues with the 32. They are as efficient as anybody. They're basically the league's best offense in the 32. You can't find a spot where they're not the favorite right now. Obviously, Dobson is going to be, for me, Dobson has to be in the conversation for goalie of the year. The Archers have no spot where you say, all right, we can attack them there and maybe we got a shot. You need to have them, not maybe not play a great game right now, I think, to beat them. So if you can disrupt them enough, maybe you got a chance. Maybe the injury bug keeps biting them because it has been a problem a little bit at times this year. But otherwise, you know, it's tough to look at that roster and say, this is where they're not any good, because they're outstanding everywhere. Outstanding everywhere. So the Archers are the clear number one seed. They've mathematically locked it up. The Water Dogs and the Cannons are now tied for second in the standings. They're split by goal differential, but they have the same record. They're both 6-3. They're going to it's all but certain they finish in those two spots, second and third. Water Dogs are plus 10 on goals. Cannons are plus 20. Water Dogs play the Archers this week. Cannons play the Whips. So if they both win, it basically stays as is. If they both lose, it almost certainly stays as is, because it's hard to imagine the Water Dogs making up 10 goals either way. If one wins and one loses, obviously the winner gets the 2 seed and a date with the Atlas in the quarters. And that's definitely a preferable outcome than playing anybody else. You want to play the Atlas if you're going to play in the quarterfinals. You want to play that 7 seed. They're a team that's, you know, hasn't been able to look organized and put it together this year. So, you know, I think that's kind of the intrigue there. Those two teams, the Water Dogs and Cannons, are locked into those spots, 2 and 3. But the difference between playing the 7 seed and the 6 seed is massive. And for that reason, if you're either one of those teams, you really can't look at this as a week to rest your guys or take your foot off the grass, because you need to put yourself in the position to play that seven seed, to get the two spot. You're trying to win this weekend. You are not letting it up at all, getting ready for the playoffs. Next in the standings is the Redwoods. They are 5-4, and they are in fourth. Their goal differential is a horrendous minus 13. They had a couple of those stinker games where they only managed a couple of goals that are kind of sinking their goal differential. But because of their differential being what it is, they are all but assured that whoever they end up tied with record-wise, if anybody, they're going to be seated below them because their goal differential is so bad. They play Atlas out in Utah. With a win, they get to 6 wins. But again, even barring both the Cannons and Water Dogs getting massively blown out in their games, the Woods will just stay in fourth. It will, however, a win does lock up the Woods for the last spot in the championship series. In the Sixes tournament, top four make it. The location for that, I guess, has not been announced yet. I wouldn't be surprised if they go back to the St. James. That place ruled, but a win does get the Redwoods a spot in the championship series. I know some people don't love Sixes. I know some people think the random event at a season is like kind of blah, not everybody plays. Look, man, the dollars attached to this thing speak for themselves. Everybody who shows up, win, lose, or draw, every player and every coach who goes, regardless of outcome, gets a check for $5,000 for being there. If you are on the winning team, every player and every coach on the winning team last season got a $10,000 bonus. So all those guys on the Chrome that won last year, all of them, $15,000 for about a week's work. Everybody who's on the runner-up, the Atlas that finished second, they get a bonus for another $2,500. So every coach, every player on the Atlas last year who showed up and played, $7,500 for a week work. And again, the Whips and the Archers who were there and didn't make it to the final round, but it's still $5,000 a guy for being there. Like, that is not bad, man. The idea of playing for that kind of the bonus check of $15,000 for a week of work, that's motivating. That's something. So not too bad at all there. Should the Woods lose, they'll have to watch and see what the Whips and the Chaos do. Either a Whips or Chaos win will drop the Woods down out of the championship series if the Woods lose. If the Whips and the Chaos both win while the Woods lose, then the Woods will drop all the way down to sixth. So you add all that up. A Woods win, they will lock into fourth. They are finishing fourth. If they lose, they could still maybe finish fourth, but they can also finish as low as sixth. So a Woods loss, it'll come down to what happens with the Whips and Chaos and goal differential, and they'll finish somewhere between fourth and sixth if they lose. The Whipsnakes are now in fifth with a 4-5 record, but a +4 goal differential, and that helps them here. They are 6 goals better than the Chaos, who have the same record. And obviously, as we said, they're 17 goals better than the Woods. They play the Cannons this week. Tough matchup, right? The Whips have been hot, but they are playing for a Champ Series spot, again, and all that sweet, sweet cash and playoff positioning. They can finish as high as fourth. If they win and the Woods lose, the Whips can go up to fourth championship series spot and better positioning there. If the Woods win, Whips will come in at fifth or sixth. If they all three lose, it comes down to goal differential. The Whips will finish somewhere between fourth and sixth. They'll probably still be fourth or fifth. Again, the Woods differential being minus 13. If they lose at either of those teams, the Whips or Chaos win, the Woods are going to drop down below them. So the Woods really need to win if they want to try and make that Champ Series. Chaos are essentially in the same boat as the Whips. They're trailing them just in the goals column. Chaos play the Chrome. That's kind of the interesting thing here. That's kind of a wild card game, right? They'll have the opportunity to make up some ground in the goal differential column. They might be 6 goals back of the Woods, but the Chrome just traded Jackson Morrill. Their offense has been putrid anyway. And the Chaos defense is excellent. If they can carve up that Chrome defense, win that possession game, you know, try and squeeze a couple turnovers, a couple extra possessions out of there, and really try and do some scoring, that's a game where you could see, I think you'll kind of look at it early and kind of know if the Chaos are saying, let's close this goal differential gap. Let's see if we can beat up on this team and leap over the Whipsnakes. Because that's reachable for them. And a win there makes the championship series spot reachable. If the Chaos can win, and the Redwoods lose, the Chaos, they can run the score up and jump over the Whips into the championship series. So again, the Chaos matchup, I think, is what makes that interesting and what gives them the ability to really crush that goal differential column here in the last week and potentially jump all the way up to fourth. But they, again, there's this mash of Woods, Chaos, and Whips there from four to six. They're going to finish in there in some order. One of those teams is getting that last champ series spot, and it could legitimately come down to goal differential who does it. Atlas currently sitting in seventh at a not so pretty to look at, 2-7. Yikes. Cromer 1-8, and then last, and with the moral trade, as we said, Cromer are sort of white flagging it here, looking towards next year. The playoffs are you know, out of reach for them. Look, they're trailing Atlas by 17 in the goal differential column. They are one game back with one game to play. So, like, mathematically, no, they're not eliminated. Chrome would need to beat Chaos and need Atlas to lose against Redwoods by enough combined margin in those two games to create an 18-goal swing in the goal differential column for the Chrome to make the playoffs. That's absurd that that could happen. It could, though. You know, cue up the Lloyd Christmas, you're telling me there's a chance.gif. You know, it could. I can't imagine seeing that happen, though. Because of that, Atlas can't really do anything in the standings here. They're locked into either seventh place or the miracle finish in eighth. They'll be watching the Cannons and they'll be watching the Water Dogs to find out who their first round opponent is, basically. It'll be one of those two teams. You know, for Chrome, again, I think, you know, they're watching Brendan O'Neill highlights at this point, or at least that's what I'd be doing. We kind of talked about a lot of this already. You know, taking Brendan probably means he's coming out of the box or playing out of position at X somewhere else. It's not an insane take to suggest that they take Shelley first overall. Kevin Brown from Inside the Cross had the take as well. I know there are coaches out there in the college ranks, and I'm sure there's some in the pro ranks too, who consider Schellenberger to be a better, like, overall player than Brendan O'Neill. That opinion exists in the D1 ranks among notable coaches. So either way, the Cromer on the clock, first overall. We'll see you next year, guys. But that's the playoff picture. So they're really kind of the things to watch are Cannons Water Dogs, who's going to get to play the Atlas, who gets the spot, the game against the 7 seed, because there's a big difference between playing the Atlas or playing one of the Chaos Woods or Whips. That logjam from 4 to 6, who's going to emerge from there? Redwoods, do they win and get the champ series spot? Or do they lose to Atlas and give us just goal differential mayhem in the middle there to sort out for who gets that last spot? Those are kind of the two big things to watch. Archers are done. They're locked into one. Nothing can happen to change that. And then if those games are going on and you start seeing the Chrome blow somebody out and the Atlas getting blown out, that's when your ears can perk up and say, oh my God, is this thing actually happening? But again, the margin in those two, between a Chrome victory and Atlas loss, the margin needs to add up to 18 goals for the Chrome to make the playoffs. So, hey, if it's coming down to twos late, maybe it'll be fun on social. I don't know. That's playoffs, man. That's a great last weekend. I know it's not like we all lament that seven teams make the playoffs, but the playing for position like this and getting yourself to a place in the standings that has meaning, whether it be financial for that last champ series spot or positioning to play, you know, to be that two seed. I think that's still fun. Still exciting. You know, we can revisit the conversation about too many teams making the playoffs on another day, but I like that there's, you know, basically five teams that are all going to be jockeying for something that's very important to them this last weekend. All right, let's do something we haven't done in a little while. Let's go to the mailbag. Let's open up some mail. These have been coming in, and I can't imagine the last time we did it. It's been a couple of months since I answered them, but I don't want to get it twisted here. I am always very appreciative of questions and submissions that get sent. If you want to send one, just head to the Sticks In site. There's a link at the top that says mailbag. Fire away. I will get to it. I will answer it on the pod, or I will maybe start doing these in writing too, providing your questions is not just like the ravings of a madman and some insanity that's offensive and horrible. I will try and answer it. So these are, I picked, you know, a handful out here. I didn't get to everybody, but I picked a handful out that I thought would be good conversation for the pod right now. So here we go. First one, this is from Roman. Roman says, Quinn McCann is in the player pool. Would he be a good fit for the Redwoods? I am a Quinn McCann fan. I will preface this by saying I have no idea what Quinn's plans are for pro lacrosse, what his job is, all that kind of stuff. A lot of the guys who get into the finance world right out of college, you know, sometimes they don't have time for lacrosse, or their new job just flat out won't let them play lacrosse. It's definitely a thing that happens. You know, you had a guy like Kevin Lindley spent his whole first year on the holdout list because of his job. Kate Sostad is on the holdout list for the Cannons right now, all this whole season, because of his job. But to that point, if that's the case for Quinn McCann, somebody should pick him up and put him on the holdout list and just stash the kid. He went to Notre Dame. He arrived at Notre Dame as a very highly rated offensive-minded midfielder prospect. He started for them immediately. He was a freshman starter on the offense for Notre Dame in the midfield, and was an offensive side of things major player for them for years. And the last year or so, really 2 years, he has kind of reinvented himself as a two-way guy, as a defensive midfielder, a wing player, you know, plays some short stick D midi, can stay on and play offense because he's skilled enough. There's a lot of Bubba Fairman in him in that regard. Everyone, of course, is going to remember his half field goal, full field goal, whatever it was in the title game, but he really is a true do-it-all midfielder now. And he is a very great athlete who's versatile enough to do all those things. And, you know, I think as rosters adjust to this shot clock change, and maybe teams start carrying more midfield depth and carrying not two face-off guys anymore, he's a guy who you want to look at, I think, to have a spot. Atlas looked at him in camp, didn't keep him. I think they could bring him back. To your question, I think the Woods definitely could be interested in a guy like Quinn McCann. I think he makes sense for them. I think the Chrome could be interested in Quinn McCann. I think there's, you know, that's already, you know, three teams there that could probably be looking for a guy like that. Young guy, two-way player, you know, can do a lot of things for you in playing a position that I think is going to be very in vogue again soon. You know, there was the sort of after the first year of the PLL, the idea of finding the guys who didn't need to sub, the two-way guys, so you wouldn't get cooked in transition, very much became something you wanted to try and find because of all the twos getting hit in year one. Nobody wanted to get caught in transition and get bombed by twos. And for a while, that was the only thing teams wanted. I think we could get back to the idea of stockpiling these two-way guys who do everything and don't have to sub because of this shot clock change. So. Yeah, I like Quinn McCann. Again, I hope somebody does pick him up. I hope he's willing and interested and able to play. Next question from Chris. Does the move to a city-based model with the home team playing two games at home all but guarantee an expansion team? Expansion is a very common refrain as a problem solver for the perceived issues that the PLL has. Oh, there's so much talent. There's not enough spots. Just add teams. They're going city-based. They need more teams to keep hitting all these markets and all that. Look, expansion might be something that's on the PLL radar. Maybe it is, and I don't know. It really is not as easy as, well, let's just make some more roster spots. An expansion team is another 25 roster spots, 19 on game day. It's also another $735,000 in player salary every year. And then you have three coach salaries. You have the costs related to player health coverage, the workers' comp stuff. You have the cost of traveling, those 19 to 21 guys, whatever it is, plus the coaches, plus support staff every weekend. Right, I don't think you can expect that travel costs gets a really gigantic reduction if the PLL puts a team in Minnesota. The players who play for the Minnesota Water Dogs or whatever aren't all moving to Minnesota. They're still traveling every weekend, and that's still a travel cost. You know, that there's kind of the cost of developing new branding, even if it's just updated old MLL IP. There's the overhead of developing all that new merch and everything. There's, you know, does the PLL have to expand its media team for this? We can kind of keep going down the rabbit hole here, but I imagine you're getting the drift. So expansion is not just, hey, wave a magic wand and we have 25 more roster spots. It's not cheap and it's not some one-time cost. Figuring out how to make it work is a lot. I think at some point, you know, PLL, I think, obviously would like to move in the direction of not being single entity and individual owners owning teams. Commissioner's job is grow the league, increase franchise values, just like, you know, the NFL or NBA is. That's where we all want to see pro lacrosse get to. But, you know, for now, expansion means finding money from existing investors or finding new ones to try and make that happen. So to the question, no, I don't think it's a given that the PLL expands with new home markets or with home markets at all. Could they? Sure. I guess they could if they've been planning on that part of it. You know, some teams are likely, I think, already going to be rebranded. I think Paul has said in the past that it's tough to market like the Chaos. Like, that's a tough brand to market. So, you know, after acquiring the MLL, PLL owns all that IP. They could bring back a strong brand. Like, everybody talks about this all the time, like the Outlaws or the Bayhawks or whatever. You know, that might make things a little bit easier. Still a very big lift. I think the better way to allocate resources like that, maybe rather than expansion, is to make sure those teams in those home markets, you put as much as you can into those local partnerships, activations, you know, the sponsorships within the community. Get those first 8 home markets really right and make sure you nail it and you have the formula ready for expansion down the road. So when you say, we're going to put a team in whatever the next market is, okay, we've got the way we do it because this is how we did it in these first 8 and here's where we crushed it. We need to replicate this. Next we had, Tommy left a comment on my article about Gibson Smith and the question about when, if, do I think we were going to see GMs? And this, I think, would mean GM separate, obviously, from coaches. Tommy also asked about expansion. We just covered expansion a little bit. So we'll skip the expansion part of that. But like I said in my piece that I wrote there about Gibson Smith and sort of about, you know, the available talent in general, on the GMs, we have them now. The real question is, when does it get separated from the head coach role? I sort of get into why I think there's a need for that in the article. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can read it on the Sticks End site. But the basic gist is coaches more quickly and maybe readily develop emotional connections and, you know, for lack of a better word, just fierce loyalty to their players. And they tend to stick with their guys. You know, they have their guys. And they might stick with them longer than they should or longer than might make sense because of name, again, the loyalty, whatever else. A GM might be feasibly less likely to do that. A GM is more quick to move on and build the roster differently. Separating the two is kind of like expansion, something that probably sounds easy to propose, simple in theory, difficult in practice. I think anyone who will do the job of pro sports GM is probably not going to be doing it on the cheap. If they're going to do it, do a good job. You can't kind of phone in being a GM, so you know you can't part-time that, I should say. So that's 8, you know, basically executive level, you know, high priced comp structures that you have to be ready to absorb. And, they also probably aren't doing that job alone. You're probably not just hiring 8 people when this happens. There's probably support staff there. It's a lot. I really think there is value in that though. Because you're investing in a legitimacy and a perception of legitimacy. You're getting closer to what the big 4 are like in pro sports. If we have front offices and the whole deal, you know, the NLL has it. GMs and coaches are in separate roles. I'd like to see that happen sometime soon for the PLL. I hope they're able to make that split. When they go to get hired, consider this me indicating my interest for one of those 8 jobs, but I doubt I would get one. Jake says he got into lacrosse in around 2016, more so when the PLL launched. How did the MLL function roster-wise? Looking at old rosters, I cannot understand how some of these teams did not have playoff success. The Hounds had Connor Fields, Matt Rambeau, and Ryan Brown. In 2018, yes, they did. They had that group. MLL rosters functioned basically the same way. They were bigger than PLL rosters, but yeah, look, if you look at some of those old rosters, you're going to see some loaded teams. That's never been unusual. That 2018 Hounds team, you see that team on paper and you're just like, oh my God, the team was very, very good. Staggs was the coach. They won 500. Although I think Connor Fields only played a couple of games for them. I'm going to say he played like 5, maybe 6 games, maybe less than that. Even still, they were a good team. This sort of harkens to something I've said, you know, way back when PLL launched even, and even before, and it's honestly, it's what made me so excited about the PLL launching when it happened. When you're talking about the actual product, the lacrosse on the field, the guys playing it, it has always, always been incredible. It's, to me, I've always said, it's as entertaining as anything you can see in the big 4 sports. Incredible speed, strength, agility, athleticism. Pace of play has always been great. The game gets up and down. It's high scoring. It checks all the boxes for things that American sports fans with love. It's always been electric. The PLL did not create that part of it. PLL didn't set out to. They didn't try to reinvent the wheel with that. You know, they changed, you know, a couple of things, a couple yards out of the field and a 2-point line a yard closer. But otherwise, we're basically playing MLL lacrosse. You know, the games obviously are shorter because there's timing things. But the PLL, what they were doing was not to setting out to change what was happening on the field. We weren't going to say, like, well, the problem that we're having is that the game's not exciting enough. No, the problem that they were setting out to solve was taking this unbelievable product that they have, this incredibly entertaining thing, and actually getting it in front of people. That was the failure of the MLL, was they couldn't market the stars well, they didn't market the games well, and they struggled to change kind of perceptions and stereotypes around the sport. Obviously, the pay scale was what it was, and it's made massive strides since those days. And because of that, you make it more worthwhile for these guys to stick around and play a little bit longer and contribute to the growth of the game and everything. That's where the PLL makes these changes. The lacrosse on the field, it was great then, it's great now. It's tough to go back. You can go back and watch some of those classic games, man. They're incredible. Absolutely incredible. So when you look at those old MLL rosters that are maybe from before the days for folks where the PLL brought you to the pro lacrosse world and you didn't really care about the MLL because, you know, it wasn't for all those things I just mentioned. They couldn't bring you into it, but the PLL can. You can go back and watch some of those games and you can go back and look at those rosters and been like, man, that team must have been sick. Yeah, they were. They were awesome. Everybody was really good. If you're stunned at their record, it's kind of like looking at the Atlas on paper this year and being stunned at their record. You're like, they did what with that team? Come on. Everybody was really good. The lacrosse is really good. And it's really, really hard to win consistently. It was, you know, just kind of how it is. But yeah, the rosters, the way they functioned, not all that different, I guess. Tim, who, after sending me his height, weight, bench, squat, and deadlift, asked, should the PLL fans care who is investing in and funding the league? Between the LIV merger, Saudi Newcastle takeover, World Cup, and other sports washing enterprises, fans are taking more interest in who owns the teams. If PIF were, or I guess if you say PIF, I don't know, I always say PIF. But if they were to invest in the PLL, not that that's a possibility at the moment, should fans oppose the investment? One might be able to make the argument that the Barstool partnership might not want to be the image lacrosse wants as in quotes, but there's a big difference between state-sponsored sport washing and Billy Football. Wow, Billy Football catching strays. Unfortunate. I like Billy Football. This is an interesting one to me. So let's see if we can get into this without trying to be political. So to preface this, we are not getting political. None of this is political. This is not me getting political. If the PIF, which if you don't know, that's Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund. They invest on behalf of the Saudi government. So the Saudi government does not have the best record when it comes to human rights or being particularly progressive. As an example, homosexuality in Saudi Arabia is not only legal, I believe it is punishable by death. So when you consider this type of thing, questions start to fly around about what you might be willing to do and how much money it would take for you to do it. It's that kind of conundrum. For golf, it was about saying, how much of this are you willing to ignore for a ridiculous amount of money? All those LIV golfers who were saying, like, I want to grow the game and it's good for the game, blah, blah. And the entire world heard them say that and were just like, bro, you're getting nine figures from the Saudis. That's why you're doing it. Like Phil Mickelson, you bet $1 billion a day. You're getting a nine-figure check. That's why you're doing it. We had a LIV golfer on TV essentially downplaying 9/11 without expressly saying that, because they're taking money from the Saudis who did 9/11. So, like, you know, it's not pretty. The sports washing aspect, Saudi money might come from places that are of questionable morality, maybe, or even legality. And even then, it's effectively laundered through investment in sports teams. It did it with LIV. They just gave Neymar $1 zillion. Soccer's kind of their thing right now. In the question, they mentioned some other things that are happening there. For the lacrosse side of this, the PLL positions itself and brands itself as a league that's inclusive and progressive, right? They have activations for Pride Week. They do stuff with Black Lives Matter, all of that. To me, taking money from the Saudis, should the Saudis come along and say we want to invest in lacrosse, you sort of out yourself then as kind of hypocritical, because you're out here pushing lacrosse is for everyone on Pride Week, and you're taking money from a government that executes LGBTQ people the next day. Like, it's tough to square those two things together. You've just you're basically just saying the money is more important to you. When PIF is involved, you're always going to be looking at very significant money. If they say, look, I've got a $500 million for the PLL, because they find that in the couch cushions over there, they need to decide that that's the price of them not supporting the LGBTQ community publicly anymore, and that not being part of their brand, because it probably wouldn't be. They need to be okay with being part of that sports washing part of this. Are they as a league good with that? Are the players good with that? With that being where their salary comes from? And if they do, are they okay with the repercussions that might come in the form of backlash from some fans? You know, there are plenty of golf fans who do not love the LIV Tour. And I think that's kind of where you start for me. So I always start by considering the human rights piece of things. It's basic, foundational. Everything else comes after that. How do you treat your fellow people on the planet? With respect, with love, or maybe not so much. I'm not going to tell fans they should oppose the investment, because I'm sure there are some lacrosse fans who also don't love the LGBTQ community. There's some that do, and there's some that don't, and there's, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the beast. So some would be fine with it. Some would probably not like it. I can't tell a fan what they should or should not think about this. So I can't answer that part of the question. But I'll say this, if the day comes where the PLL takes Saudi money, the first question I will ask at media day is if they're going to continue to openly support the LGBTQ community and welcome them as fans of the league. We'll see what they say. Tim also asked, do I like to do a solo podcast? He's curious if I'd want a co-host or if I have dream candidates for a co-host. I do like the solo thing a lot of the time. Sometimes, I guess. I enjoy the interviews I do. If I could find more time, I would do them more often. I do really like doing the interviews. I love talking to these players because they're the thing I like most about the league, obviously. It is difficult. You know, I'd absolutely welcome a co-host. Absolutely would love a co-host. It's a more traditional podcast format, obviously, to have two people talking rather than just listening to me ramble on like we're doing today. But I don't know if I have dream candidates. I mean, if you're starting to start formulating a list, I'd want someone who doesn't have the exact same opinion as me on everything all the time. It's no fun to just listen to two people agree about lacrosse for an hour. I think you need to have, you know, a healthy balance of seeing eye to eye and obviously having some disagreements, too, because that's part of what makes sports and sports media fun. Dream candidates, like if I could pick anyone, is tough. I think probably the names I would be interested most in, and like being a co-host, obviously these are dreams and would never happen, but guys like Ryan Boyle or Quint, somebody like that, I think I would love to obviously have like a weekly conversation about lacrosse with, because who wouldn't? There are plenty of players I think would be great for this, and I hope when they're done playing, or even while they're playing, they maybe try and find time to give it a try, because there's a lot of guys in the PLL with a lot of great things to say. And if you gave them the forum to open up and really be themselves about it, I think they would do really, really well. Guys that spring to mind like that are guys like, obviously Jerry Raganese is a great personality, I think would be great. But, you know, other guys, I think like Ian McKay, Trevor Baptiste, Romar. Romar is a great quote, and Romar will always shoot you straight, tell you what he's feeling. And he has, you know, obviously plenty of opinions about the game. I think Marcus Holman would be great. Tom Schreiber would be great. You know, you listen to these guys post game, and you know, you're going to get always with every player, you're going to get the mix of like the standard cliches and post and coach speak of, you know, I just want to help the team win and credit to the guys around me and so forth and so on. There's always going to be that, but that list of guys is also really good at getting you in with some genuine honesty and perspective that they have about the game, about what happened and what's going on around them. So their personalities comes through more. And I feel like those guys would be great in a podcast format, whether it's with me or on their own. It doesn't have to be with me even. I would just love to hear them. But look, hey, if you're listening, you have a suggestion for who you think would be a great regular co-host, go ahead and let me know. We'll see what happens. Final one we got to here. A question about the jerseys. Which did I like? Which weren't great? I think this is related to the mesh the throwback jerseys. I thought they were all great. The Cannons, I thought, was incredible. It sold out in like 10 seconds. And ESPN showed Sierra wearing it, and like that was the end. If I'm Ryan Drenner, I tell that story a zillion times over the next month or so. Hey, my jersey sold out of the store in 10 minutes because Sierra wore it on TV. Like, can you imagine being able to tell people that about yourself? God, where has the cross come to? Can you believe it? But anyway, look, really all eight of them I thought were great. I thought the font on the Whip Snakes jersey was a little meh, but like I'm nitpicking, whatever. If you think that's a poor take, I won't fight you. If you love the font, cool. It just wasn't for me. The Whips being my least favorite, I would still give them like a 7 out of 10. You know, I thought all the jerseys I thought were really cool. The two things that are odd to me are, one, calling them throwbacks because I'm an old jerk. And when I hear throwback, I'm like, oh, what are we throwing it back to? And in this case, like, we're not really throwing it back to anything. You can call it like retro style or faux back. Very trendy, whatever. But that's not a big deal. It's me making, again, that's me nitpicking for the sake of doing it. It's being a jerk. But also, I will say, I do think the price tag was kind of rough. $165 for an adult porthole mesh jersey is eye-popping, for sure. I know Jerry Maganese went on Twitter and did explain, and he's a guy who knows this stuff. This is what he does. So how labor-intensive these jerseys actually are and you know, the materials and all that, and that the price point is reflective of how labor-intensive they are. And I get it. But like I see the kid's size at $150. Oof, I can't understand it. You know, some of it is probably just subconsciously, like I'm looking at a jersey that is designed to look old and cheap. I see $150 and like your brain breaks the same way that like when a designer releases like a plain white t-shirt with a hole in it and it's like $300, like what the hell are we doing? You know, I think I'm having that same kind of reaction, but I will say I did get DMs from a couple people in sports media, not just lacrosse media, but like the media, sports media world at large, expressing their surprise to me at the cost of PLL jerseys. I think some of them, it got put on their radar because, again, Sierra, but the discussion went the same way with like a, you know, 4 or 5 different people. But, you know, the basic gist is like jersey costs, particularly for the kids jerseys across all sports, is crazy high to the point of being like something must be done about this. It's insane what they cost. You know, even in that landscape, though, of all the kids stuff is way too expensive now, even all that context, $150 stands out. So that was like my two things about the jerseys. The way they looked, awesome. All the logos were cool. I thought the Cannons had the best one. I thought the Atlas was very cool. I am going to try and pick up that Atlas hat because I like those colors, but yeah, that was my jersey takes. But that's the mail. Again, if you have questions for the mailbag, you can head over to the StixEn site, hit mailbag at the top, submit your question, and I will answer. But that is the mail. That's the pod. Thank you again for sticking around. Hopefully we get a weekend primer back this week because I am off the IR. The food guide is coming Thursday, and it is awesome for Salt Lake. We have another guest writer. I might even have some input from some PLL pros on spots to hit in this one. So keep an eye out for that. Watch those games this week because it's like there's 5 teams playing with a lot of things on the line. So, and then after that is playoff time. We got Salt Lake City this week, Gillette, Shewhart, and then we're in Philly. It's flying right by. We got about a month left of PLL, folks, playoff included. I mean, where is the time going? But thank you again for coming back. I hope you enjoyed the pod today. Thank you for sticking around with me, and we will see you next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.